So obviously, Parshas Ki Tsetse, the Afas Torah in the beginning, is not a simple thing to understand. The greatest tzaddikim are the ones that go out to war. They have a lapse in judgment, and their Yetzer Hara gets a hold of them, and all of a sudden, the Torah says, okay, your Yetzer Hara is going to make you do it, so it's mutter. I mean, this is what we're saying. Lo dibra Torah ala kenegid Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is going to tell you to do it. So, well, what the heck? Just go ahead. We're going to monitor it. Exactly. Like, why not make it in the first place? Well, it must be that's part of the whole nature of the world, and it's got to be it's like that, but why don't we monitor any Yetzer? Why are we monitoring this Yetzer over any such thing? And just stop. Can you imagine an army nowadays doing this? Can you imagine any army in the entire... Okay, granted, maybe in Africa, or like a really terrible Arab army. Can you imagine an army doing Yifas Torah?
Abu Ghraib was arguably worse, so...
Granted, there's...
No, there is an element of this in military operations.
I guess it is. It's just such a crazy... From a civilized country, so to speak, would you expect such a thing? And why wouldn't B'nai Israel be held to a higher standard? In which we say, you know what? Get over it. Your Yetzer Hara is trying to tell you to go do something crazy? Get over it. Don't do such
a thing. You have something similar. You have B'nai Israel and him and brother wanted me, so I should give them the spot.
Oh, 100%. No, I hear you. It's just, it seems like something in which you have a Yetzer Hara for something which is Arias. This is pure Arias, not just for food, not just for anything. This is Arias. Why would we monitor something like this? If normally you're not allowed to be together with a non-Jewish woman, here we're monitoring
it. It makes a lot of sense.
Okay, we'll, maybe we'll be...
No, I'm just saying...
Not talking to the same thing over here.
You go off to a war, you have to kill someone, you see horrible, horrible things. The act that Torah is talking about performing can be pretty life-affirming and can act as a pretty big calming agent.
I hear that. You just expect something different. You'd expect different out of the American army. It's very strange in this way. And it's right. It's just very strange. It's a Pella. Why would it be a little bit different back then? It's clearly a more general concept. So what exactly is the general concept you're supposed to get out of Yifas Tohar that we're supposed to learn from over here? Rashi then tells us that Yifas Tohar, if you marry her, if you do take this woman, you're going to hate her. And when you take this woman and you hate her, you're going to have a child. And the child's going to be a Ben Sora Mora. We also know that Ben Sora Mora, lo hayav lo yiyah, right? Never was, never will be. So what exactly is the Torah trying to tell us? How can this all be? So Chazal say, drush v'kabal schar, right? Darshan, you accept schar, but I don't understand. How does this smuchin go? What are we trying to tell you from this parshas? Rabbi Yashiv says, there's a big difference between din Torah and ruach haTorah. Between what the halacha is and between what the Torah wants you to do. And it says like this, lo kor v'yushalayim, the reason why Yerushalayim was destroyed, it wasn't destroyed, el v'yushalayim, only because shedanu ba din Torah. Because they were judging them by the din of the Torah. Not according to the ruach haTorah, but rather because they kept the Torah according to exactly what it said. Listen, does it say that I'm not allowed to have so much meat, or I'm not allowed to drink a lot of wine, not allowed to get drunk? Doesn't say I can't get drunk, so I can't get drunk. I want to go ahead and get drunk. Because of that concept of going ahead and saying, I want to do whatever I want to do and nobody can stop me, that type of concept is just crazy. If you search for a heter for anything, you look for a heter for anything in the world, even the Yifas Torah, the Torah in theory, you could find it inside there. But what does the Torah want you to do? What does the Torah expect out of you? And then what does the Torah want you to decide? That's the concept over here. And it's like this, Rabbi Yashiv gives from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. The concept is, a person could potter himself from davening every day of his life, and even from learning Torah, every day of his life. All he has to do is live and never leave a dirty alleyway or a bathhouse. Live there your whole life. You'll never have to daven. You're always potter. You'll never have to do anything because you're always not wearing clothes. As long as you're doing that, then you're perfectly fine. But wouldn't you call that guy a fool? Granted, you're right, there's a difference. But
you chose to live in the alleyway. You chose to live in the alleyway.
Yeah,
you went to war. You're in the situation.
Here is the concept. The concept is that we understand what you did was halakhically correct. However, we're not comparing it exactly. We're just saying, we understand what you did was halakhically correct. That you have to go out to war, and therefore this type of thing, and we're mastering it for you, lahalakha. We're allowing you to live in a mavui metunah, in a disgusting little place, if you want to potter yourself from davening. But what are you expected to do, based on everything else that you've learned in the Torah? Based on everything else. You realize it's the Yetzer Hara. You realize it's the Yetzer Hara that's making you do such a thing. You know it. You know it's the Yetzer Hara because you know what's going to happen. You know that your wife is not going to be a good wife. You know you're going to hate her. You know you're going to have children that are messed up. You know that's going to happen in the situation. And yet you still have a taiva to do it and you want to go ahead and do it. This is the concept of try to work on yourself and try to do something to make sure that it doesn't happen. That's the concept of what the Ben Sora Mora is supposed to teach us in this context. That don't allow the apostor to happen. If it happens, then yes, granted, something bad might happen because of it. But don't allow that sort of thing to happen. And this is the hashkafa that comes out of it. If you go into the Ishas Sifas Torah and you say, you know what, I'm going to take what I need. I know I shouldn't, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do whatever I can. That's a hashkafa that you're leading on to your kids. Your kids see that type of hashkafa. And then what they say is, if it's mutter, it's mutter. And I can do whatever I want. So they take that meat. They try eating meat. They try drinking wine. Whatever they can get, whenever they can get it. And they try taking more and more and more. And they say, it's mutter. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that I can't. And they take more and more until the point comes where the Torah tells us they're going to start stealing. They're going to start murdering. Because they realize there's no way for them to stop. The message is clear.
Yeah,
if you go after the Yetzer Hara, you're going to pay in the end.
Granted,
meaning it never happened, it never will happen. Granted, that is true. But this is the concept of what might happen, what could happen if you go in this direction. And that's what we're afraid of you doing. That's what we're afraid of all these types of things. Later on in the Parsha, one of the strangest things in the world, I still remember somebody coming up to me and saying, it only says Toeva once in the entire Torah, an abomination once, and it's talking about two men that are together. And I said, that's absolutely not true whatsoever. Toeva appears many different times. One main place where you see the word Toeva all over the place is by Arias, by being together with the wrong woman or whatever it is. It says Toeva all over the place. That's mostly where it is. The other place where Toeva is four times in this week's Parsha. It's the other place where Toeva is mentioned in four very, very random, seemingly random places. Number one, it says in Chaf Beis Hay, if a man wears woman's clothing, or a woman wears man's clothing, Toeva he. That is a Toeva, it's an abomination, that's absolutely disgusting. That's number one, that's a place where it's mentioned. Now that in theory has a connection to Arias, but it's still a little bit strange. What are you doing so badly? You're just wearing woman's clothing. I can't. Oh, thank God. It's not something that I have a taiva for, but that's all it is. So what's so bad? Even on Purim. There's no heter. There's a famous Ramal, but we won't go into that right now. Number two, Chaf Dalit Dalit. Machzer Grushaso. A guy gets married to a woman, divorces her, she marries someone else, divorces the second guy. You are not allowed to remarry that woman. Now let's remarry that woman. It's called Machzer Grushaso, and it's called a Toeva, an abomination. What is Matzer Grushaso? What's so bad? What's the issue? You want to go back to your original wife? That's such a nice thing. What's the problem with such a thing? That's number two. Number three.
Well, that's not legal loopholes. People
be like, oh, hold on. You are correct. The first husband going back to his wife after she remarried somebody else. Esnan Zona. If a Zona gets a gift for her harlotry, if she takes that gift and donates it to the Beis HaMikdash, that's called an Etnan Zona. It cannot be donated to the Beis HaMikdash. It's called a Toeva. Such a gift is a Toeva. I mean, maybe it's a Kapara. How is that so bad? She wants to atone for what she had done. She wants to give it to the Beis HaMikdash. And that's called a Toeva. What's such a Toeva about this situation? That's number three. And number four is if you have uneven weights in your house. A weight or something like that in which you have, which is not the exact weight that you need. A 5-pound weight, that's really 5.5 pounds. That's called a Toeva. That's called an abomination. What does the word Toeva have anything to do with these things? To be together with another person's wife, that I understand is a Toeva. To be together with one's sister. To be together with another man, according to the Torah. All these things, I can understand that being a Toeva. That already I can put in that category. But these things, having uneven weights in your house, what do these four things have to do?
I mean, the...
Well, hold on.
This Svara
is easy to get. You just have to... Rav Moshe puts a little kinesh to put all four of them together. Says the following. Machshava. All four of them have to do with a person's thoughts. The thought process that went in to doing these deeds, these types of things. Here's the Toeva. The Toeva is that you think to yourself, I think I'll be okay if I just go ahead and I do something. Yifas Tor is the concept of, I'm just going to go ahead and do something on my own, and here's how that thought process goes over here as well. Maybe the guy thinks to himself, I'm going to wear women's clothing, I'm going to hang out with them, and I'm not going to allow myself to sin. He tests himself. He puts himself in a terrible situation that he sees. He shows that Kadosh Baruch Hu, see, I was able to do this, and I didn't sin. I didn't do anything wrong. And he's put himself in a nisayon that he never had to put himself in. Every day, says Rav Moshe, we beg at Kadosh Baruch Hu, the lowly day nisayon, don't allow us to be looked degraded. The lowly day nisayon, don't allow us to be tested. We don't want to be tested. That's not a good thing. Having nisayon that we might fail is a terrible thing to have happen. Don't allow such a thing to happen. Don't allow such a thing to possibly have happen to you. That's the concept of lowly day nisayon. So here's what this guy says. This guy thinks, no, I'll be able to take it. I'll be able to handle it on my own. And I'll be able to go in wearing that clothing and it won't have anything happen to me. Even if he doesn't do any of errors, even if he does succeed in what he's doing, you can't put yourself in such a compromising position. You can't put yourself in such a situation that's right there. That's a silly thought to have happen into your head. That's the exact same thing with the midos and the mashkolos, the weights and the measures that you have in your house that are uneven. You say, I'm just going to have them in my house. I'm not going to use them. What do you mean you're not going to use them? What do you think? You think you're just going to be able to keep them in your house? What happens when all of a sudden a guy comes by and you know you'll be able to make a little bit of extra money? If you use that little thing, you'll be able to make a little bit, just a dollar extra, $2 extra. You think you're really going to be able to hold yourself back from using them? Get rid of them. It's your Yetzer that's making you think that it's okay for me to have. I'll just use it as a paperweight on top of my desk. You're going to use them. That thought process of testing yourself and allowing you to do such a thing is called the Toeva Hashem, Toavas Hashem. And that's the idea of it's such gaiva. And the line of Toeva is also mentioned in Pasuk and Mishlei, Toavas Hashem Kol Gvalei. Anybody who has that gaiva is considered an abomination to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the concept. That is a Toeva. How could you allow yourself to do that? I still remember a guy telling me that he signed up for Web Chaver. So I said, that's great. Who do you sign up with Web Chaver with? And the way Web Chaver works, obviously, for those who don't know, is that whenever you go to a certain website, it gets sent over to another guy. So the other guy sees the websites, sees all of them, and he sees what you've been to, so you get embarrassed. So you won't go to certain sites because you're embarrassed of what the other person is going to see there. So that's what Web Chaver is. So I said, oh, that's great. Who's your Web Chaver? And he mentioned another friend of his. A friend, single guy who was in yeshiva. I said, really? So I went up to the other guy, I'm like, how do you handle that? How do you know if it's a good site or a bad site that he goes on? He said, oh, it's okay. I go and I check them up myself and I go see what they are. I'm like, are you joking? Are you afraid of seeing what those things are? Why would you go to those sites? He said, nah, I don't have a problem. I won't have an issue with it. I'm like, what kind of a person are you? There's no way you're not going to have a problem with this type of thing. And he meant it seriously. He meant, honestly, I'm not going to have a problem going to those sites. I won't have any issues whatsoever. That's ridiculous. There's no way you can't. I'm sorry?
And yeah, the Chaverim would have the same problem.
Yeah, it's granted. Meaning, a normal web chaver has to be somebody that either is a woman or somebody who's not going to go to the sites will just take what they say and go back to the person and say, I'm pretty sure you saw this or you saw that. What does it say? But never check up the site on your own, right there is going to be an issue. What if there is something there? That's not the way to do it. I still remember that idea. That thought process of I can do it. I'm not gonna have a problem with it. That is called the Toeva. The Etzan is the same deluded type of thinking. I know I'll make a kapara by giving my gift over to the Beis Hamikdash. No, it's not what you want to do. If you got a gift from something disgusting, destroy it, get rid of it. That's the real form of tshuva. Not to do anything else. That's the real kapara. You think that you can bribe Hashem into giving you something better, that's not what you can do. It doesn't work that way. It's get out of it. And then the final, the Master Grushasso, it's trading wives. And I think we all understand the concept of that. Master Grushasso is a toiva because what the person thinks to himself is, oh, I see that my friend's wife is good looking and my wife is good looking, so we'll just trade for a little bit. I'll divorce my wife, he'll divorce his wife, we'll marry each other's wives, and then we'll divorce again and we'll marry our own wives back. That's the way to get around it. That's Master Grushasso. Such a disgusting thought. The thought process that goes into these things are disgusting. And that's why it's called a toiva. Because you think it's something, well, I'm doing something mutter. You think you're doing something that's even a kapara. You think you're doing something good for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. God, I'm testing myself to show you how great I am. To that, a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, that's ridiculous. That's a toiva. That's an abominable thought that we don't want for over here. That brings us into a Rav Yaakov. Rav Yaakov says the entire Sefer of Devarim is all a sefer for the king to read at Hakel, and it has to do with a kahal. It has to do with a group of people, a group of people that want to improve on themselves and work on themselves to for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. A group, a whole group together. This is what the king reads to everybody on Sukkot, right after Sukkot, right after Shemitah. Right after then, after Sukkot is over, after Shemitah, the king gets up and he reads Parshas Devarim, it's the mitzvah of Hakel. Why Devarim over anything else? Because that's the mitzvah for the whole kahal to work on. And he brings proofs for all that. So he asks, so why do we mention the concept of Hilkos Gittin and Yibum and Mamzerim and those people you're not allowed to marry in these parshios? What does that have to do with the kahal? That has to do with individuals. But it has nothing to do with a group of people. That has nothing to do with everybody else that's around there. What does that have to do with Yibum and Gittin and Mamzerim? Don't those belong in Acharemos, Parshat Acharemos, when we go through the people that you're not allowed to marry, the people you're not allowed to be with? What are they doing over here? He gives a huge chiddush. Here's the chiddush. Marriage is not a private issue that concerns only the families and is involved in just the families alone. It's not. Marriage is for the entire kahal. You have somebody who is added on, somebody who's brought into the kahal, who now is part of everyone else. He is somebody who's there. If you can't get married for whatever reason, a mamzer, an amoni, an adoni, somebody from Edom, Mitzri, any of those guys, they're known as psulei hakahal. They're known as the ones who are puzzled from coming into the kahal. Because if you want to be part of a huge group, then you have to be able to get married within that group. That's the concept. And the reason why is because you're just adding on people into the kahal, into the community, so the whole community becomes stronger together. So marriage is not just something for the family, for the husband and the wife, and that's it. It has to do with everyone there. That's why. Doesn't this make sense? That when you go to shul during the Sheva Brachos, nobody in the shul says Tachnum. Why not? Well, he's putter from Tachnum, but so what? If an Avol goes to shul, a guy who's in mourning goes to shul, you still say Tachnum. It's that guy, he doesn't say Tachnum, but everybody else does, because nobody combines in the mourning of that one guy, whoever passed away. You don't combine in the mourning for that person. But a marriage, we're all involved. Everybody has something to do with this marriage. We're all involved in this wedding that happened between these two families. And that's the concept. You're combining, you're forming a sefer, you're forming something together. That's the idea of what marriage is all about, and that's why marriage issues are brought up in this week's parsha. The concept of what they all stand for. And since I'm in Gittin, and I'm learning Gittin right now, and because Gittin is in this week's Parsha, I gotta mention to you the last mission in Gittin, because it gives a chiddush now on that last mission in Gittin, which is tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. A very perplexing Mishnah. Last mission in all of Gittin says the following. Beis Shammai says, a man can divorce his wife when he finds an erbas davar, when he finds that she did something wrong. If he finds that she was doing something that was improper, then he can go ahead and divorce his wife. Why? Because the pasuk says, the pasuk says, what is it? Ki ervas davar? I think that's the word. Matzabah ervas davar. Thank you. Ki matzabah ervas davar. Found an ervas davar there. Beis Hillel says, even if she burns his food, she made a dinner one night, she burned everything, go ahead, divorce her. You can go ahead and divorce her. Now that's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. That's just burning the food. But that's from the word davar, from right there. Rabbi Akiva says a crazy thing. Rabbi Akiva says, even if you find a girl who's more beautiful than your wife, you can divorce your wife in order to marry that girl. Now that's a pella. Rabbi Akiva says that, and that line, because he learns it from the word b'haya im lo timtza chen be'enav, if she doesn't find favor in your eyes. How could this be? Where in the world, well, how could this possibly be? It's like, it's a good joke. It's a great thing to be able to just say, like, oh, I found somebody better, honey, I'll see you later. And that's that, but that's terrible. What kind of a marriage is that? What does that mean? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky goes into this. He says the following. He says, the Torah is telling you a tremendous idea of what, how a proper marriage should be worked on and what it should be about. A husband has to consider his wife the smartest, most beautiful, and greatest woman in the entire world. And she, vice versa. Now, granted, for her, that's very, very easy. That's going to be very easy, especially my wife. I can't imagine there being anybody else. But for some people, that is a little bit harder, and that's an issue that people have to work on. But that's what you have to say. If you find someone prettier, you find someone smarter, you find someone who's better than your wife, that means you've got a problem. Because that means you need to work on something, because you should have seen your wife as the best at everything. That there's no one greater than her. Let's think of it like this. People don't see themselves as ever doing anything wrong. When they have a svara, a logical argument that's there, it's very hard to persuade that person that he might be thinking the wrong thing. They always think they're doing the right thing. But let's think of it the following. Let's say the guy makes a major mistake. He says something that was very, very silly and just came out of his tongue. He just rolled out of his mouth and he said it. And then after he said it, he said, "Oy vey, I can't believe I just said that." Right? Does he yell at his tongue? Does he curse out his tongue? He said, "Tongue, how could you do such a thing to me?" Of course not, right? Because why? Tongue is just part of the person. It's all of me that made the statement. The tongue was my emissary that did it, but it was all of me that made the statement together. I can't see my tongue as different from my hand. If I go ahead and I punch something, I punch the wall because I'm so angry, right, and I break my entire hand, I don't yell at my hand, "Well, you shouldn't have punched the wall." It's clear that no, my whole body is involved over here. It's my whole body working together to do something like that. So that's how it's supposed to be between the man and his wife. She's part of you. She is exactly who you are. When she makes a mistake, it's like your arm making a mistake. You don't yell at the arm. You just understand. People make mistakes. That's me. And I understand. I might have made a little bit of a mistake. That's just part of me. And that's that. If you have a taina on her, if there's a claim that you have that she burned your food or anything like that, that means you're. If you look at it as something different than you, if somebody else made a mistake, somebody else did something, that's already not a reason to divorce her. You wouldn't call it a siva. You'd call it a simin. That is a sign that you're not yet at the place where you're ready to be with her for all time. You have to work on that point from then on. And Beisholam, Beisham, and Rabbi Akiva aren't arguing. They're mentioning different points that are mentioned from the Gemara. And they're trying to say that there are three things that a person should look at his wife and never have happen to him. You should never find, well, there should never be an heir of a stub. You should be able to have such a relationship where you're open with one another to make sure those types of things happen. You should be able to say, "Well, wait a second, no one else is prettier than her." She should never be able to see anybody else that's prettier than her. And you should make sure that if she does burn her food or something similar, you don't have such a mistake and say, like, "Oh my gosh, I can't deal with this anymore." You just understand, people make mistakes. It's my own mistake. I should have cooked my own food tonight. And that's that. It's just a simon to watch out, to make sure these things don't happen. That's the concept. But that's so hard for two people to be able to find each other like that and to be able to consider themselves as one, to be able to consider themselves one goat. That's unnatural. That's the pshat and the Gemara in Sota. Kashal lezavgan kekriyas yamsuf. It's hard for a zivug, for a connection to happen between a man and a wife, like kriyas yamsuf. Now, ask your question. Is it really hard for God to make kriyas yamsuf happen? Is it hard for God to split the sea? What's so hard about that? What's so hard about splitting the sea? God can do anything. The answer is because there's nature. Nature works in a way that it just goes naturally. It just flows. Nothing stops. It goes in a normal way. If you want to do kriyas yamsuf, that means you have to stop nature. It's like telling a very wise person to say something silly. He just can't do it. Not that he can't. It's hard for him to do. It's hard for a kofarfu to take the perfection, which is the nature of this world, and to change it and make kriyas yamsuf happen. It's the same thing with a husband and a wife. It's so hard to make them connect with one another again. Because naturally they're like magnets going the other way. Not magnets that are connected to one another. Those magnets that go the opposite way because they think differently, they act differently, they have different things. This is the concept of, it may be beyond Teva, but that's what you have to do, and that's the concept of this Mishnah. And yes, it's Kasha, but that's the idea behind it. That's the idea, he says, behind the Baskol that goes out before they're born, and everything regarding that. One last thing. What's Pshat in Mechiyas HaMolek at the end of the Parsha? If you missed Parsha Zachor earlier in the year, you could be Yotzei according to most Pshitas, Parsha Zachor now, during the end of this week's Parsha, because this is where it all comes from. We have to remember HaMolek, and we have to erase HaMolek. Now granted, there are ways of erasing HaMolek. They say that you're Mekayim the Mitzvah by writing the word HaMolek on your shoe. They do this by Haman on Purim, and stamping your foot. By erasing it off your foot, you go ahead and do that. But Chaim Kanievsky is famous, but when he used to test pens, he would test pens and he would write the word Amalek and then he would tear up the piece of paper. Then he'd be able to have the word Amalek and then tear it up. So he'd be Mekayim the mitzvah of Mechiyas Shem Amalek, to erase the name of Amalek. But seriously, what is this idea? It's clearly not killing them. Because if it was killing them, we haven't known who they are since the times of Sancheirith. It's been years and years and years since Amalek has existed as a nation. So what is this Mechiyas HaMolek? What is that? Now granted, there's a famous story of the Chassam Sofer, where the Chassam Sofer was walking in a field, And this child, he was a young boy, so I don't know how old, 12, 13 years old, but when he was still learning under Reb Nachman Adler, so he was still very young, this child threw a rock at him, threw a rock right at the Chassam Sofer's head. He missed the Chassam Sofer, the Chassam Sofer picked it up and whipped it right back at the kid and hit the kid right in the head. He went back to the yeshiva where Reb Nachman Adler was. Reb Nachman Adler, who was a makubel, or not a closet makubel, he was an open makubel, said to the Chassam Sofer, he said, "You look different. What did you do? What happened on the way here?" And he said, I don't look any different. Reb Nachman Adler said, "You did a mitzvah that I haven't seen in a very long time. What mitzvah was it?" He went back into the room, he saw everything, and he said to him that there was a child that hit me and whatever, that almost hit me, so I threw the rock at him and I must have killed him. So he said, "Oh, that must have been Amalek. You're Mekai in the mitzvah of Mechiyas Amalek." Now granted, that could happen, but you're not allowed to actually go ahead and do that. You're not allowed to actually go ahead and do such a thing. Now granted, there are... Yeah, the Gon was famous. There were such stories about why he wouldn't leave, because of if Amalek would pass by. The Gon was also well known to say that Germany was Amalek, that anybody from Germany was from Amalek. This is way before, obviously, the Nazis in Achshamam. But the Germans were on this level. Where the Grom himself, Evan Schleimer, the Chassam Sofer is in all the biographies. You'll see it in every single one. All quoted from the Chassam Sofer. Every biography has it. The new Chassam Sofer, the two-volume set that's in Hebrew, has it like prominent in one of the first things. And in the old Chassam Sofer both story, they're all over. Everyone has a story from Nelson Adler. That's that. But with the Grom in Germany is in Evan Schleimer. It's in the notes from Evan Schleimer, in which he mentions Germania as being Amalek, and that's famous. Reb Chaim Brisker is the one that used to say that anybody who is anti-Semitic, and I don't know, anti-Semitic is what they call nowadays, like making a movie of like a Jew, it's not, but like a real anti-Semite who hates Jews and wants to kill them, that is Zera Amalek, that's what he says. But you still can't kill them. There's no way that you can kill anybody now, especially with Dina Mahuse Dina, unless you want to get into big trouble. There's no way to do it. And if you say, well, Mechiyas Amalek means erasing their names, that nobody ever remembers them. Let's get rid of them so that nobody ever remembers who Amalek was. That can't be. The Torah exists forever. The Torah says to remember Amalek. You can't take the word Amalek out of the Torah. So Amalek will always exist in our minds. It will always be there. It can't leave because the Torah will be there forever. So what does it mean to erase Amalek? What is the idea? So the pshat is, I don't know where I got this from. I have it in a notebook from years ago in Eretz Yisrael, and I never wrote down where I got it from. But the idea is the following: erase Amalek's pshat, erase what they stand for. They don't believe in Ashkacha, the famous idea that Amalek equals the gematria of Suffolk. They don't believe in Ashkacha Pratis. They believe in randomness. Nothing happens for a reason. It's all random, according to whatever should happen in the world. They use the Bechira. They use their idea of free will to free themselves, to allow themselves to be free from any restraining laws, from anything that tells them, you can't do this, you can't do that. They say, forget it, we don't want to do this. That's the idea of what they stand for, to refuse to acknowledge any Acharas HaTov to a creator that may have created them. No, there is no creator. I created myself, or the world created me, but there's nobody that I have to thank, there's nobody that I have to listen to. I don't have any laws. God hates that more than anything else, because He gave Bechira to a person to be able to choose wisely, to be able to improve upon yourself, to use it for good. And they use it to show that there's no God out there. And to that we say this is ridiculous. Those sphakos that they bring about, those doubts that they bring into the world, that's what we have to fight. That's what we have to erase. What we do is the following. You erase them by erasing any vestige of their pshat within your mind. Anything that says to you, I don't believe in God, or there's something wrong, you erase those pshat. How do you do that? By learning what you need to learn. By knowing what there is to know, and destroying any idea in your head that may be antithetical toward the ideas that the Torah are saying. That ability to answer them up, maybe using Rabbi Victor Miller or anybody else that writes Sfarim on these types of subjects, is the idea of erasing Amalek. The Ikar is in your mind, and that's the idea behind it. It's the idea of to say Mechiyas Amalek is in the peh. The ability to say to other people and to speak out to other people why Amalek is full of garbage. Why they don't have any substance. There's nothing to them. And why they're wrong. Why they're dead wrong, and why we're right. That's the concept of what a person is supposed to do. When a person does it correctly, there is no greater feat. There is nothing better than destroying Amalek and making sure that those people have nothing to stand on, that there's nothing for them to get up on their soapbox on and yell out to the people. That's the concept. So our summary is, there's a Din Torah, and then there's a Ruach HaTorah. Not everything is supposed to be mutter. There are some things that are mattered because of our tremendous Yitzhar, but that doesn't mean everything can be. We then mentioned Toeva, the thought processes. Bad thought processes can lead you to do abominable things. That's number two. Number three, we said marriage is the din of the community, which led into that the ideas of what we're trying to say of divorce is just supposed to be how to think of your wife as yourself and thus not have these problems to explain that last mission I'm getting. And number four, Mechias Amalek. The destruction of Amalek is again in your mind. The thought process of destroying what they stand for and destroying the sfeikos that they cause throughout the entire world. Should be zilka to destroy all of Amalek, especially this week. Reg Boris Shana. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.